Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Craig, founder and CEO of Castos, the podcast hosting platform for growth-minded brands. I loved it. I read it and I was like, yay, that's me. Why am I not using Castos yet? Shit. Am I missing out? So yeah, tell me more. But, you know, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to diving in and chatting today. Castos, like you mentioned, podcast hosting for growth-minded brands. We're actually kind of playing around with the headline now, and we can talk about, you know, positioning and messaging maybe in the future. But yeah, I'm the founder. We've been in business for 8 years. We're a team of 9 people, fully remote, you know, kind of doing mid 7 figures, profitable and growing. So we're kind of living the dream these days. It could always be better, but we're pretty happy with where we are.
That sounds amazing. All right, we have a happy story here, so that's a good start. But how did you get into it in the first place? Like, what's your background?
So my background kind of before this phase of my work life was in sales. So I worked for a couple of different medical device companies here in the US and was kind of like, I guess like an early midlife crisis is what I would say. I was like, gosh, I don't want to do this. I had had my second child, was traveling all the time. I was like, this is lame. I was listening to a ton of podcasts at the time and I was like, hey, like, this seems like a thing. I ought to get into this space. And so we started a productized service in the podcasting space, where we do podcast editing and production. We still do it today. So started that kind of let me quit my job. And through that, the opportunity came to acquire the WordPress plugin that we now own called Seriously Simple Podcasting. So we acquired this plugin. Y'all can appreciate this, like, growth by acquisition. Acquired this free plugin for a very small amount of money, fortunately, and then built the initial version of Castos as an integration with WordPress kind of only. And then about 8 or 9 months later, opened it up to where now you use Castos with WordPress or you use it by itself, just like you would most other podcast hosting platforms. And today, about 70% of our customers use Castos kind of by itself and about a third use it with WordPress.
Okay, that's amazing. And I wonder if, you know, because I already had a story here on the podcast where, you know, kind of having something on like specific to a platform was also a great marketing tactic because, and I feel like it was WordPress as well, because you can like almost work with it as with like Apple Store. That's how you call it. I'm not a very avid user of my iPhone, but but you can promote your product there. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, with acquiring the WordPress plugin, we really acquired a customer acquisition channel. It had thousands of free users, and some on the first day, some version of those or some percentage of those upgraded to the first paid tier. So, yeah, that's really what any kind of freemium or channel distribution like this gets you. You know, it's in the App Store, it's in the Atlassian App Store, it's in the HubSpot or Salesforce App Store, it's in the WordPress plugin directory. You know, I think anyone who does this tells you like, yeah, it's great, but it also has some drawbacks. And like, you know, today we see WordPress having, you know, its fair share of drama and issues. And that's definitely a drawback, right? Like with the good comes the bad. Oftentimes we get this built-in distribution where we get a steady flow of customers, you know, I'll put air quotes for free because we have a product we have to maintain. We have customers we have to support, with integrate with this third-party thing, which is often super complicated and highly variable. So like the support load is actually quite a bit higher because of that than if you didn't have this. But yeah, I mean, at this point, it's kind of like the date we brought to the dance, right? Like that's the situation we're in. We have this, like whether overall it's good or bad, I don't know. Like it was a really great way to get started. You know, like one of my mentors talks about this as a kind of like a level one business, right? Like build a thing that ties into an existing place where people are. And like an app store integration is certainly that. And we've kind of evolved a bit from there. But especially if you don't have a lot of really kind of strong marketing chops, it's a really great way to get started.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking about marketing, and I have a quote here from you. So you shared it on LinkedIn. that, you know, you said my goal in 2025 is to double my income, and all I need to do is to spend the first hour of every day on marketing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a bit of a stalker, sorry.
No, it's all good.
But yes, so since we started talking about marketing, what does it mean? Like, what's your plan? And how, you know, how do you plan to do it for Castos?
Yeah, so I think to kind of generalize a little bit, I think a problem that a lot of us fall into, and I say us where you're a company under 15 people, maybe, where the founder is still like heavily involved in doing stuff. You get caught up, but you're more than a couple people, right? You get caught up in managing the team and working on partnerships and doing one-on-ones and, you know, rounding up all the loose ends. That is your job as a manager and as a founder is to run the company, right? Like, I got to freaking do payroll and I got to do reporting to the IRS and all this kind of crap. What I found in reflecting on my year last year is I prioritized that too much to the detriment of not doing marketing. And so the first hours of my day, I would come in and I would triage Slack and I would look at my inbox and I would do all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, the biggest limitation I think we all have isn't necessarily time, but mental energy. I only have, I'm 44. I only have like a few really good hours a day, you know? And for most people, it's usually first thing in the morning. Like, I got my coffee, I'm ready to go. We're recording this at 9 o'clock. It's like perfect for me. And I'm spending that doing the thing that probably isn't the highest value use of my time. The highest value use of my time is doing sales and marketing. So like my goal for the year is the first hour of every day is doing sales and marketing. And I've done, you know, recording this on the 9th. I've done it, you know, if we have 5 working days so far, 4 of the 5 days probably. And it's great. You know, I come in, I don't even look at Slack or anything. I turn on my music and I work, you know, hard for an hour. And it's been really, really productive.
What kind of music?
So I have this app on my computer and it's called Suka. It's like a bit of a Pomodoro timer with like some community stuff. It used to be called something else that was way better, but it just has this like trance kind of metal music that
gonna get
like I can't deal with. Yeah, I can't deal with words or anything, but it's just kind of like upbeat background music. I turn it on and then like my brain knows like, oh shit, this music's on. Like we gotta do work.
And
so it's good. Like I pause notifications and everything. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds good. All right. Then, you know, the first thing during the day that you have to do is marketing. And we're doing it, like you said, 9 a.m. And, you know, this is not my first podcast. I also did a podcast with my previous company. And it was always a debate, like how good of a marketing is a podcast? So like,
yeah,
it's so much time. It's so much prep. It's, you know, it's research. It's stalking someone on LinkedIn. It's, you know, it's listening to their previous episodes. It's really like digging. It's a bit of a, I don't know, a journalism in a way, right? And at the same time, you have this like 1 hour of conversation max, which is good. And, you know, should we or should we not invest in this? And obviously, you know, my opinion was yes, yes, yes. Like it's great. It lives there. You know, you establish relationships. You never know where it can go. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, doing this is it good marketing? Yeah. Does it work for you?
Yeah. I think I'm not a, you know, like I'm a dabbler in the crypto world and in the crypto world, they call it like Bitcoin maximist, right? They just think Bitcoin is going to the moon. I'm not a podcast maximist. I'm practical with it, I think. I think it's really good for a lot of people. But what I think is even better, which is what I'm doing now, is, and you're probably doing it too, maybe without even realizing it, is taking a video first approach to content. So we're recording this on Riverside. I'm sure that this will go onto YouTube. This will also be a podcast. This will also be a blog post. This will also be social posts. This will also be, you know, all this kind of an email newsletter. So what you're doing, and this is what we're doing, and we're using a fair bit of AI for it because we're not doing interviews for the most part, is most of my content creation is getting ready to record a YouTube video. And that's a YouTube video, it's a podcast, it's a blog post, it's social, it's email, it's all this stuff with a couple hours of my time. And there's no way that you could start with an email newsletter and build up to all of the rest of that stuff. And so that's what we kind of advocate, is like the place podcasting sits in a really efficient content marketing arena is it is, you know, maybe their primary goal, but maybe the secondary kind of output or outcome of video-based or video-first content. So I think that's where 100% across the board, it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And you have your own. Mm-hmm. Your host too. Yeah. The first question that I asked is like, how do you feel being a guest? Because like every time I'm a guest, I'm terrified. Like, this is not my comfort zone.
That's
make people shine.
The source of like that, my podcast, it's called Rogue Startups. Like, that's the source of almost all of my kind of personal brand marketing, right? So that's like the beginning of a lot of my LinkedIn stuff and Twitter stuff. And if I was with enough to write an email newsletter, it would just be a synopsis of the podcast for the week and it goes on the website. And yeah, that's like, it's just so efficient. And then it covers all your bases, right? Because you can't really just do one channel. I think you got to be a little bit everywhere. And arguably YouTube is a pretty awesome place to be.
Absolutely. So coming back to my initial question of, you know, 1 hour of marketing every morning, is there like some specific kind of strategy that you were taking, other like specific steps? So 1 hour, well, I don't know, like 10 minutes to review what happened on the podcast, 10 minutes for the newsletter, 10 minutes for socials, like what's going on?
Yeah, it's not a well-oiled machine yet, I can say, but really like it, I try to follow about the process I described, but I'm trying to batch as much as possible. So today I'm doing this, but tomorrow what I'll do is ideate on the topics that I want to record next week. And so I'll just come up with ideas, and I might like spend an hour on LinkedIn or Twitter or YouTube, right? Looking at what else out there is interesting. I'll put those into a Notion doc. I'll kind of think on it for a while. I'll go for a walk. And then maybe later in the day or over the weekend or on Monday, I'll say, okay, I like these three. Let's come up with like title and thumbnail ideas for like, what's the concept for this video from this kind of idea. And then I'll go to like outlining it and scripting it and all that kind of stuff. So like, I like to batch a couple of these together, because the hardest thing is like just showing up and recording something, unless it's an interview like this, because, you know, like we said, all the pressure's on you to make good radio. But like if you're not doing an interview style podcast and it's like a monologue or a YouTube video, like you got to come prepared, because like just riffing doesn't really work like a lot of people think. So anyways, I try to batch like ideation, solidifying an idea, outlining it or scripting it, and then recording. And then I kick it over to our team and our team does all the production from there.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, so far, you know, what has been working the best for Castros?
Yeah, what has worked the best for us is long form content and SEO, like written content. Aside from our integration with WordPress, like that works really well. And that's like that continues to work well. But we have invested heavily in content marketing and SEO, and that continues to perform really well. I think, you know, a lot of it's a complicated thing these days, though, right? Like SEO in this age of AI is like kind of hard to know where it's going. I was all in on it until about a year ago. And I think it makes sense for most of us who've been all in on SEO to think about diversifying our traffic sources a little bit. And for us, that's mostly YouTube.
You know, I always ask, like, lately, like this year, maybe half a year, like if anyone has figured out how to optimize for AI, for ChatGPT, for Perplexity, because, you know, everyone's kind of just like playing around with it. us included. And like, it's fun to go to Perplexity like we did the other day, and we're coming up with the agenda for our new M&A course. And, you know, for the sake of it, we asked Perplexity to, you know, to create it about marketing due diligence. And what it did, it basically collected almost like 80% of the information that it collected from our website. And we were like, yay, that's working. That's super cool. How? No idea. Like, we did nothing for this.
Yeah.
How does it work? It's kind of like freaking magic. Have you guys figured it out?
I don't know that we've figured it out. Like, we definitely show up in search results and results in ChatGPT and Claude and Perplexity. I suppose it's because we've been doing content marketing and SEO for 8 years, and we just have a ton of stuff out there, and we have a very high domain authority, and we show up in a lot of search results. How we can, I think to your question, from here go forward to optimize our content to show up in AI results, I don't know. I think it's an enormous opportunity. And I would suppose that it's not Google rankings that are correlated most to that, but what the AI perceives as like the best first person experience on this thing. So not just writing, you know, best podcasting mic under $100, but my review of this thing that I used for my podcast. I would suppose that it wants that first person experience.
Interesting. Okay. All right. That's a new opinion. There were quite a few here, but that's new. I don't think I've ever heard this. All right. Well,
What do you think? Like, what has been the prevailing wisdom you've heard, or like, how are you all thinking about it?
We don't know for sure. But like, it's definitely correlated with like the Google results, but yeah. How exactly? And I'm just asking because like, we're also playing quite a bit with, you know, like additional little products, right? That are, for example, working with Perplexity API. And I'm wondering, like, if I do something, say, I don't know, like a bot that would work on SaaS Group website and, you know, help founders find out all the information about due diligence, and it would work with Perplexity API. Does it help in a way, like Perplexity, to kind of rank us higher? Like, is there a hack like this?
Yeah. I think about that too. Like, if we feed, you know, one of the things we're working on right now is using Claude probably to write better blog posts. And so one of the things I want to do is feed our entire blog into Claude as a project or something like that. If I do that, does it weight our content better than what it already knows of us? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Super interesting. Like, for now, I'm just like, that's magic. That's super cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. All right. Well, coming back to what you said about, you know, playing around with your messaging and with, you know, what I just said, Castos is, why are you doing this? Why did you decide that this is the moment to do this?
Yeah, I think that maybe like some of your portfolio companies and like some of the folks who are listening, like, we are in a pretty competitive space, right? Podcast hosting, there's a dozen plus competitors out there that at their core do the exact same thing we do, right? You upload files to us, we distribute them to Apple and Spotify, and we give you some analytics on them. We do a whole bunch of stuff other than that, like our WordPress thing and our, you know, websites and monetization and everything. And as a company, we kind of sat back, really start like towards the, like the beginning of the third quarter last year, and said like, we got to get really specific on like one thing that we do way better than everyone else. And it was a fair discussion internally, because as you can imagine, some kind of groups of the company think that, you know, the thing they do is best, you know, right? So like, our support is amazing, which it is. And our support's amazing. Like, is that the thing that we can stand on for the next 5 years? I don't know. Right. Cause like, that's hard to show. You know, is video such a big thing? Video podcasting, not talking about YouTube, but like this podcast in video format going out to Apple and Spotify. Is that the thing? Ultimately, we landed on monetization because One thing we've always said is like, if we can go from the kind of liabilities column to the assets column in our customer's mind, it's totally transformed their perception of us as a tool, right? And so if we can start making you money, then we're good, right? And it's an asymmetric result, right? Like the result of us winning as a monetization platform is way bigger than we have good customer service or the UI is good or even video podcasting. And so that's what we went with. And so today, you know, our H1 is, I think, from audience to income, Castos, you know, does it all or something like that. And so really trying to talk to, I think, a lot of creators who say, like, I have a podcast as a way to like sell my stuff, but I also want to make a little money directly from it. And that's kind of the thing with podcasting is there's direct monetization, like ads and donations and paid subscriptions. And there's indirect, which is like you doing this podcast. Like you're not necessarily looking to make money from this podcast, but you want deal flow and investors and stuff like that. But you certainly could monetize it directly, right? You might have sponsors that they kind of subsidize the cost of post-production and hosting and stuff like that. And so I think that most customers are definitely up for some form of monetization. And so that's where we're really looking to lean into.
Okay. So Castos is a hosting platform making you money.
Yep.
There you go.
There you go. Use it. I'll update the homepage after this. Yeah.
Yes. Perfect. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, because I've been using Riverside for forever for this particular podcast. And at what point Castos appeared? And it was like, okay, what the hell is Castos? Sorry. I didn't know what it was. Like, I was super curious. But, it, you know, they added a button and, you know, I went to look what it is. How did you decide on this partnership? I mean, obviously, you know, I assume what it does for you, but how did you land it? And how did you come up with the idea of this partnership even?
Yeah. So I think, like a lot of companies, probably we look at the whole journey that our customers take, right? Like, what do you have to do to have a successful podcast? You got to like come up with the idea, and you got to have the gear, and you got to record, and you got to edit, and you got to publish, and then you got to promote. And so we're kind of towards the end. And so we just kind of looked upstream a little bit and downstream. And upstream, just one kind of step was really obvious, right? There's Riverside. And then we had an existing integration with Descript prior to them acquiring Squadcast even. And so, you know, the answer is it does the same thing, right? Like from Descript or Riverside, you just publish your episode directly to Castos. So instead of I got to freaking download the file and then I got to upload it again and all this kind of crap, you just connect one time and then you click a button within Riverside or within Descript and you publish your audio or video in Riverside episode to Castos.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's what it does for, you know, for me, right? What does it do for you guys?
Yeah. So I think one is that it gives some credibility and visibility, just like you saw what the heck is this Castos thing? Like, oh, I better check them out. So that's cool for our I think it solved a problem for our existing customers as much as anything, because we have a lot of customers, many of them use Riverside. And so it was cool for us to be able to say like, hey, we just made your life a lot easier. So we get a little bit of visibility. We make our existing customers happier. And then like Riverside is a great company. And so just working with them on some content partnerships and co-promotion opportunities has been really good. How it came about is we did a fair amount of that because they're also big kind of content marketing folks. We had done some guest posting and link swapping and things like that, made sure they're included in a lot of our content and vice versa. And so it wasn't a cold intro at all. We had known them and we gained trust both ways over time. And I think that's like, you know, for folks who are looking to get into partnerships, like that's always my advice is like, don't just go get married on your first date, right? Go and do something really simple. Maybe just do a link swap and then write a guest post and then do a webinar and then do an integration. And then from the integration, who knows what could happen? Like some big kind of biz dev thing could happen. And it still may, right? For us with Riverside, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Do they want to be a host as well? I don't know. But if they do, I would think that we would be one of the folks they would call.
Interesting. So you're looking into a kind of like an opportunity like this. Are you actively looking?
No, we're not actively looking, but, okay. You know, what is it? We're not for sale, but if somebody wants to buy us, we would, we would talk. Yeah.
Dirk. It's a potential. Yes. But yeah, sorry. But no, just speaking, you know, about partnerships. Well, first of all, I think you're absolutely right. I love partnerships. I think it's such a huge opportunity, and it's such a great way to kind of like put two amazing, hopefully, things together and like make more of it. But I think you're right. It's not a fast track. It's more of a long-term strategy, but any advice on, like how to even start with partnerships?
Yeah. I mean, I think that thinking about the customer journey is a good one. So what things do your customers do besides use your tool? And to me, that can be, you know, kind of horizontal along the path that you are, or like vertical. So like vertical would be like, oh, they have a website and they send emails and they do social media and stuff like that. And then horizontal would be like, as they're actually creating the podcast, like what else do they do? And then like, yeah, starting small and simple, because it's a risk to the integration partner, especially if they're kind of significantly bigger than you. Like they're going to be saying like, who the heck is this Craig guy and what is a Castos and all this stuff. And so you got to make it an easy win for them. And you have to give them the confidence that they're not going to put the credibility of their brand on the line and risk damage to it. I think it's kind of like when you invite someone on a podcast, and you did a really good job of this. You reached out on LinkedIn and said, hey, we'd love to have you on the podcast. And you made it easy for me to say yes. You didn't say like, hey, we'd like to have you on the podcast. What do you want to talk about? Because then I'm like, I don't know, man, like this is your podcast. Like you don't make it harder for me to say yes. Don't make it harder for your integration partner to say yes. So come with like, hey, this is who we are. This is who we serve. These are a couple of ideas how I thought we could work together. And then they're probably going to go, oh, cool. I like option B.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great breakdown. So again, talking about partnerships, at one point, can I say you partnered with Tiny Seed? Anyway, you went with them, through them.
Yep.
But yeah, and you know, I love what they're doing. I think they have a great mindset, and I think it correlates a little bit with what we're building at SaaS Group, you know, with kind of sustainable growth, love for bootstrappers, you know, this bootstrapper mindset. Why did you decide to do it in the first place? I mean, I think you knew Rob and a bunch of folks there before you went there. So there was, again, this trust. But yeah, why did you decide that this was something for Castos? And what do you think such programs give to founders and businesses beside obviously funding?
Yeah. So I definitely knew Rob and Einar before we joined Tiny Seed. We joined Tiny Seed and we raised subsequent funding after Tiny Seed because we saw an opportunity in the market that we thought was a bit time dependent. So this was 5 years ago, gosh, 5 years ago, probably. So like definitely before COVID. And a lot of M&A was happening in the podcasting space. This was when Spotify bought both Megaphone and Anchor. A private equity company had just bought Simplecast. Another company was kind of going up for sale. And we were like, whoa, we got to jump on this. We have an opportunity to grow faster. We had seen some of the data internally that like, hey, this thing is working and we just need to do more of this thing. And really, like, yeah, you made a really good point. Like the funding is a part of it, but it's not a huge part of it to me. Like the money is just not that much money. I'm sure they're public about how much they give. And it's, you know, it's a salary, right, for a really good person, which that's not a great reason to give up, you know, a chunk of equity in your company. What is worth it is having people like Rob and Einar on your side forever until your company exits. And having this network of, at the time we joined, it was the other founders. I mean, Jason Fried and some of these folks are like the advisors and mentors in Tiny Seed. And still, like the mentor network there is huge, but increasingly there's 200 companies in there. There are absolute rock star founders of those companies who are the subject matter experts doing the stuff today that I want to know about. And so I'm still in the Tiny Seed Slack almost every day asking questions, answering some questions because I want to give back. But there are people in there that know everything there is to know about pretty much everything that we're all doing here in SaaS. And so that's the, you know, when folks twice a year, they open up applications and I'm doing some advising with Tiny Seed now too, helping founders there. But every twice a year applications open up and I get hit up on LinkedIn and Twitter like, hey, should I join? Can you tell me, give me feedback on my application? I always tell people like the money should not be the primary reason you do this. The network and increasingly the kind of internal network of founders is by far the most valuable part.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think, you know, because when we buy companies, we do keep them independent, you know, in a way that we don't tell them what to do, right? They decide for themselves, but we also don't keep them away from each other. So like, it's knowledge sharing, it's the network. It's, you know, any CEO can go to another CEO and say, hey, you know what? You've done this before. Do you think it's a good idea for us? Like, I think that's really valuable. But one thing I wanted to ask, because, you know, you said, you know, money is not the biggest issue here. And I feel like, you know, again, just doing a bit of research about Tiny Seed and, you know, who's there, who went through it. I think one thing that unites everyone is this belief in sustainable growth. So is there like any way that, you know, with those applications, you guys also kind of find that fit with a founder who goes in?
Yeah. No, that's a good question. So I think it's evolved a lot since we joined. We were in the first batch. And so they've learned a lot, right? They're a startup too. So they learned a lot since we joined. I do think in almost all cases, they're betting on the founder. And a bit the current opportunity, but more so that the founder is a smart and ambitious person and they'll figure it out because stuff changes. AI comes and crypto crashes and all these kinds of things that change the dynamics of a market to where the thing you invested in isn't the thing that will end up kind of coming to fruition. I think that they knew me, so that definitely helps, right? Like I had known both Rob and Einar. I'd been on his podcast. We met in person at conferences before. We're a pretty attractive company. You know, at that time, we were kind of like entirely self-serve. We were growing, we were profitable, and we're in a kind of well-defined space. Like, I think that's pretty good. At this point, I think they're looking for kind of like y'all, only truly B2B SaaS companies. And which I would call us like B2B light, almost B2 prosumer, because, you know, a lot of our customers are companies, but a lot are individuals, you know, doing this as a hobby. And like, you know, to me, like it's not speaking for them, but I would want to see kind of average revenue per account in the hundreds of dollars in a company these days, just because go-to-market is so tough. Like you gotta be charging a lot to grow quickly. And y'all probably see that too. There's a high correlation between companies that charge a bunch of money and how fast they grow and how profitable they are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So speaking about, you know, this sustainable growth and kind of having this mindset of, you know, we want to be in a good place, we want to have, you know, our amazing remote team. How does it affect the way that you grow business? Like, are there any, in a way, yeah, rules to like keep it lean?
I think like one is all along the way, we should think about investing in, I'll say, product. So design, development, kind of equally with ops. And so that's like support, sales, and marketing to me, as a SaaS company. Like those two things on the P&L should be about equal. And this is the biggest place I see like a divergence in most companies, is most companies are like, the product is everything and the product has to be amazing. And like, it's not always the thing that makes a company win. You have to have an amazing product, but that's kind of table stakes. What sets you apart if you're going to win is great go-to-market, and that's sales, marketing, success. And so I think like one, like you just have to prioritize that from a resource perspective, whether that's in-house team or contractors or agencies or whatever, but like you have to just maintain that balance. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that. And I think when it comes to lean, like I like empowering our team to be aware of what is going on with the business. Like we share not the whole P&L, but we share like, hey, we're profitable or we're not. We just started doing profit sharing with our team. We share our expenses with them to say like, hey, this is how much we spent last year on stuff, you know, on freaking HubSpot and Slack and Notion and all the, you know, we spent $100,000 last year on SaaS tools. That's crazy. Like, how can we cut that by 30%? And so you empower the team to then every time they go to do something, they take a look and say like, oh, do we need this thing or can we make do with a Google Doc? And so I think one thing it's been cool to be in business long enough to really see this thing happen, which is you go from growth at all cost, zero interest rate environment to, oh my God, the world is going to end. Inflation is crazy, to now like, okay, this is probably about normal. Like the world we were living in before, kind of pre-COVID and in COVID even, like COVID was great for us, unfortunately, is gone, right? Like zero interest rate, super free money everywhere is gone. This is like normal, you know? And a lot of folks haven't lived through a normal business environment before, but this is it. And so the reality is like, you got to be profitable. It's got to be sustainable. Everybody's got to be aware and accountable to the top and bottom line. And I think that the days of like growth at all costs are definitely gone. And that's probably really healthy for everybody.
All right. So you already said that you had quite a bit of success and growth during COVID. And this is also something that I read on your LinkedIn. I was wondering like how much of a hit did you guys have to take when it went away? Or again, because you're kind of on this sustainable trajectory, it wasn't that big that you had to, you know, adjust to a new reality.
Yeah, we definitely had to reduce the size of the team when kind of growth slowed and, you know, money got more expensive. And yeah, we joined Tinyseed, raised some additional money, didn't grow as fast as we thought we would, and had to reduce the team size because of that. And that was super terrible as a founder, you know, for me, for the rest of the team, for those folks that were affected. It's something that nobody ever wants to do. But I don't know, like, I think if you're joining a company of 9 people, you got to look at that and say, this is not a sure thing. Like this is pretty risky. And it's, the benefit is you get super flexible work schedule. You kind of can do what you want. You have a ton of opportunity for career advancement. You're probably working on really cool things. The downside is it's a 9-person company and you just, you know, maybe the perception of being stable when you're working for Walmart or Google or whatever is that it's not actually more stable than, you know, working for a small company. But I think the dynamic is probably different.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. But, you know, I was talking to a couple of founders of a conference, and obviously, you know, they have this access to a ton of opinions, and, you know, they hear what people are talking about. And it seems like, you know, they shared that it seems like 2024 has been picking up a little bit in terms of growth. So yes, the first kind of few months we were talking about profitability being the king and, you know, just kind of slowing down. And they said, well, yes. And when we had the, you know, a conference in April, everyone was like, okay, yes, slowing down. We have to be profitable. It's not growth at all cost. But when we did it in October, it was a slightly different conversation. And people were like, okay, all right, it's looking better. It's picking up. We want to grow again. And they kind of have this perception that 2025 is going to go back to growth again. Mm. What do you think? And are you seeing any trends as well?
Yeah, I think from how we're approaching growth and profitability, we are still guarding our profitability significantly. Mostly because I don't want to go through what we went through before with laying the team off and, you know, some of the team off. Like, I just don't want to do that again. We don't have a really clear, like, if we go invest 50 grand in this thing, we'll get more than that out the back end. So we're in this whatever situation of being like a pretty mature company in a mature market, with the dynamic of like, I don't see exponential growth. I don't see the path to exponential growth. So it's just not the time to optimize for that right now. We're definitely working on growth. We're definitely working a lot on marketing, but until we see those signals that like, hey, this thing is working, we got to turn up the gas. It makes more sense to kind of like save up.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Thanks for sharing. That was very honest. But yeah, I just have a couple more questions. You've been around for a while. What has been the biggest win and the biggest failure? And can be, again, it can be for like your personal journey as a founder with Castos, or it can be for the company as a whole.
I think the biggest win is that like we're still here. Like we made it through that pretty tough transition. And any founder who's like, oh, we raised some money, we're burning, we can be profitable any day, that's probably a lie. Like you can, but it's this enormous change in your business and in your mindset and in the team and in the whole dynamics. And so like I lied to myself for a long time thinking like, oh, we could just be profitable anytime. Turns out it took about a year and a half and was very hard on me and everybody. So like the biggest one is we're still here, we're growing and profitable. That's super cool. And that's so rare, right? So like, that's the thing I'm most proud of is like, I have built a business that could be here for a very long time. That's the biggest kind of single win. And I think that the biggest challenge is just like, it's never enough, right? Like we're never big enough. We're never growing fast enough. The product is never good enough. And so how do you balance we're doing good with it's never enough and I want more and make it sustainable in the long run? I don't have an answer, but that's the kind of meta thing that I'm struggling with.
Interesting. All right. And you just to add to this, you mentioned that you have a mentor or maybe a few. Correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, you mentioned a mentor. And again, I'm always curious, like you have this Tiny Say community and you have a mentor. And again, a part of what we do with Sauce Group is, you know, building this community, even without like really building a community, but we try to get people together. We try to make sure everyone's talking. We try to make sure that we know what the challenges are. So, you know, when we get to actually talk business, we know what this is about, right? We know how we can help, we know what we can address. So I feel like it's really super important for founders to have this sense of connection and community. So yeah, how do you do that? And like, what does mentorship do for you? What does the community do for you? And like, how does it really help?
Yeah. I mean, I think the community part is so important, and more, I think in-person community is becoming more and more valuable because like you all, like we're a remote team, but like, gosh, to get together once a year even is so valuable. Or for me as a founder, I go to a couple conferences a year, not because I want to hear somebody talk about the latest programmatic SEO thing, but I just want to talk to other founders who are doing exactly what I'm doing and get me. I don't have to explain, okay, I run SaaS and this is what it is. And this is what a podcast is, you know, to someone at a cocktail party. But I think it's like being a founder, I'm a solo founder too, is lonely, right? Like I can't go complain to somebody up the food chain. Like I'm it. So like having, whether it's a mastermind group or a couple of peers that are just mentors, or an actual kind of business coach is invaluable. I think everyone has to have something like that. However you slice it, I don't really know and I don't care. I've done all of it. I really like working one-on-one with a coach and I'm kind of in between coaches right now, but that's my preferred way. I just like one-on-one because I don't like sharing my time with other people. But I think just as important is having a network of peers where, you know, and I have a handful of people on WhatsApp or text with that. I just text and I'm like, hey, like I'm going through this thing. Have you seen this? Do you know a person that can help with this kind of thing? And all of that's just invaluable. And if you don't have it, go find it, right? Like go find it however you can, whether it's through, you know, something like SaaS group or a conference or a group online or just friends on Twitter. I think just find it somehow.
Yeah, that's a great advice. And yeah, like I said, I completely agree. It does get lonely. And, you know, some of the most amazing kind of little moments that we have at events. I remember my first one, I was like, oh my God, I'm bringing like people who don't know each other and they're at the same table. Like, what are we going to do? And yeah, and, you know, I kind of just started blabbing something about ChatGPT, and one person picks it up and another person picks it up and they're like, wait, I'm really struggling with like ChatGPT API. And another person is like, oh, I can help you with that. And you're like, yeah. Man, that works. So it's great.
Yeah.
Super. All right. So, you know, the last question is always about hack, and it can be anything. It can be just a life hack, like you share it now, you know, personal journey, or it can be something super specific. I don't know, how to choose the best microphone under $100 and make it work.
The best hack, gosh. Maybe I'll give a couple kind of like rapid fire. I think like video first content creation is a pretty big hack. And I use quite a bit of AI for this, but like create a piece of content for every channel. It's not that much harder. So just think about that. Like start with video, then you get a podcast, then you get a blog post, then you get social, then you get email. Like it's just not that much work, especially with ChatGPT. I think the other, talking about AI, I'm not an expert, but the places I've had the most success is when I kind of prime ChatGPT or Claude with our own content. I think that really helps. So like feed it examples of what you want and then ask it to create a different version of that or a version of that on like a different topic. That really helps. And then I think the last one is like a lot of founders I think are kind of scared to know what's actually going on in their business from a financial perspective. And don't be, because it can't be that bad, right? Like you're a smart founder, you can go figure it out. But it would be like not weighing yourself or going to the doctor or something. Like I didn't do this for a long time and I wish I had been more diligent about like the hygiene of the company from a financial perspective and really know my numbers on a consistent and accurate basis.
That's a great point. I think, you know, we all don't want to face some kind of like challenging stuff. And you know, when it comes to the baby that we're growing, it's like, no. Like if you don't look, it's not going to bite you. So I think it's really important to remember. It's boring stuff, right? But it's so important.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I really loved chatting with you. I think you've got like so much experience, and you know, I'm always fascinated to have people who have been podcasting or are doing anything in the industry, because yeah, it also gets lonely, you know, as a host. The pressure is on you.
There you go.
All right.
Yep.
So yeah, thanks so much for being here and sharing your story.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Anytime, and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.